Mumsies everywhere. Boulder and Christina came in late after we'd already started dinner, and to everyone's surprise, Boulder was cleanly shaven. The men mocked him, but I thought he looked great and complimented him. And that's when the topic of masculinity came up.
I'm curious, Councilwoman Pearl, what does masculinity mean to you?
Khan asked me. I put down my cutlery and took a minute before I answered. This may surprise you, but gender plays only a small part in our society. We put much more emphasis on personality and charisma. Boulder laughed.
Is that why you women aren't attracted to your men anymore? Because there's no difference between men and women?
I shook my head. What makes you think men and women aren't attracted to each other anymore?
Christina told me.
I have to disagree, I said softly. We have many couples living together, and our men are wonderful, thoughtful, caring, and emotionally intelligent beings that are fully capable of attracting partners if desired.
Great.
Magni sneered and squeezed the knife in his hand tightly.
My wife is without protection, and now you tell me that your momsy boys are a threat to her?
Your wife will be safe in the Motherlands. No one will harm her, but obviously... I trailed off and regretted bringing it up.
What?
Magni said aggressively. I looked down. Nothing.
What?
Magni raised his voice and slammed his hand with the knife down on the table.
Calm the fuck down,
Khan told his brother. I sighed and lifted my face, giving Magni a look of great empathy. It must be difficult for you. I'm sorry if I made it worse.
Just finish your fucking sentence,
Magni demanded, low and threatening. If you insist, I said. Laura is safe and no one will harm her, but obviously, there's the possibility of her falling in love with someone. It can be a rush to be treated with kindness and respect if you're not used to it. That set off Magni, who jumped up, knocking his chair back.
Are you saying that I didn't treat my wife with kindness and respect? I fucking fought for her, and protected her until that little bitch over there filled her with fairy tales about the Motherlands.
He pointed a finger at Christina, and that made Boulder leap up from his chair, roaring at Magni. Holding my hands to my hammering chest, I watched in horror as vile words outside my vocabulary were shouted, and threats were made. In the Motherlands, a display of rage like that would have called for months of mediation and rebalancing in a secure place of reflection.
Calm the fuck down, both of you!
Khan shouted, hammering his fist down upon the table. Christina looked calmer than I felt, and I zoned out for a moment when Khan ordered his friend Finn to take Magni out to blow off some steam. He should get some help to communicate his emotions better, I said after they had both left. That way we could have a civil dinner without shouting and fighting. Khan gave me a hard glare.
Maybe you're the one who needs help.
Excuse me. I widened my eyes in confusion.
Magni communicated his emotions perfectly clearly. I don't think anyone else at this table has any doubt that he was pissed, angry, and frustrated.
Khan argued. I kept silent after that, ruminating how incredibly far apart we were in culture, and how raising these men to an acceptable level of social interaction would take the patience of a saint. Well, since no saints are here, I'll just have to do my best. Chapter 5. First Night Together. Pearl. I had a hard time looking at Khan after his ridiculous accusation at dinner that I was the one needing help with my communication skills. Yeah, right.
What do you think?
Khan asked and waved his hands around the room.
Is it to your satisfaction?
Yes, it's fine, I said softly, and moved back a little when he approached me. That made him stop and frown.
Are you scared of me?
I saw you hit your brother today, I said distrustingly, earlier in the garden when I had tea with Christina.
So?
So I prefer to keep a little distance from you. Khan took a stance with his hands in his pockets.
You've seen Magni's temper. Is it so hard to believe my brother said something that insulted me greatly, and that I had to respond accordingly?
Violence is never the right answer, I stated.
I disagree.
Khan stretched with a moan.
But it's not something you have to worry about. I gave you my word that no man would beat, rape, or molest you. And I'm a man of my word.
Is that why I'm here in your room?
Yes.
He gave me a look of self-importance.
I'm the highest-ranking man in the Northlands, and normally, only a woman under the protection of a husband could walk safely. I take it that you're not interested in selecting a husband.
He paused, waiting for my response. Of course not, I said quickly, and gave a small nervous chuckle at the ridiculous notion that any woman would freely get married.
No, you momsies don't like to marry men anymore. Christine already told me.
Khan said with a bitter undertone, and moved closer again. This time I didn't move back, but forced myself to stand my ground.
Let's see how you feel after spending time with a real man. You might change your mind.
Are you trying to be funny? I asked. You think that insulting my fathers and all my male friends will make me like you? I assure you that our men are as real as you are. And just so we're clear, if I decided to pursue the antique institution of marriage between a man and myself, which I won't, I would pick one of our men over an N-man any day. Khan didn't look shocked by my insult or my tone. He just shrugged with an annoyed glance and turned his back on me.
You're sleeping on the left side of the bed,
he informed me. Straightening my shoulders, I spoke with the firm kindness my mom had taught me from early childhood. Thank you for the offer, but I prefer to sleep on the sofa.
It wasn't an offer, it was an order,
he said, and pointed to the bed again. Summoning patience, I refused to back down. I'm not sleeping next to you.
Why not?
He asked, and moved closer to me with his brows lowered. Because I don't wish to be that close to you.
Really?
He moved into my private sphere, making me take a step back again.
But you have no problem holding hands and staring into people's eyes when you greet them.
His tone was sarcastic. That's different.
I see.
He folded his lips between his teeth and looked slightly amused.
You think I want you in my bed so I can ride you?
Ride me? I made a sound of amusement. I'm not a horse, Lord Khan.
No, you're not.
His words were slow and deliberate.
You're a councilwoman that I've sworn to protect with my life. The best way for me to do that is to keep you as close as possible.
He pointed to the sofa.
That's not close.
Then let's make this compromise, I said and pointed to the other couch in the room, which was closer. I'll sleep on that sofa instead.
You'll sleep in my bed,
he insisted. Lifting my chin up, I sharpened my tone to what would be considered hostile in the Motherlands. No, I won't, and I'm tired of discussing this with you. As expected, Khan didn't look the least bit shocked by my rudeness.
I'm a stubborn man,
he said, and crossed his arms, but this subject was non-negotiable to me. And I'm a very stubborn woman, I said, and mirrored his closed body language. The 10 or 20 seconds we stood locked in a silent power struggle felt endless to me. I was used to people smiling and being welcoming and kind. This man was used to confrontations, and probably considered me a pushover, but I would show him differently. Don't blink, don't blink, I thought, and kept my eyes locked on him. Maybe my training in greeting people with an extended eye contact gave me an advantage, because in the end, Khan gave in.
Whatever, he said finally. You can sleep on the sofa tonight, but tomorrow you'll sleep in my bed, is that understood?
Ignoring his attempt to order me around, I changed the subject. Did you ever think how much nicer it would be if there were no borders between our countries and no ill will? As I spoke, I walked over to take a seat on the sofa I would be sleeping on. He followed and sat down in a soft chair opposite me.
Yes, of course I've thought about that.
And what are your ideas on how we could work toward a union someday? I asked.
Actually, I have a brilliant idea,
he said with a smug smile.
How does adding men to the council sound?
I furrowed my brows and gave him my honest answer. It sounds unsettling. He shrugged.
You have a better idea?
I nodded slowly. Maybe. This is something I've been discussing on a theoretical level many times with other council members. We agree that the greatest problem with merging our cultures would be the amount of prejudice that there is so deeply rooted in us from early childhood. I meant to say, in you, but in all fairness it went both ways. Khan stretched his legs, crossing them by his ankles, and leaned back with a wide smile.
I couldn't agree more. The rumors you tell about us are ridiculous.
Pleased that he was open to the idea of a union, I carried on. If we were to work toward a united world, I believe it would have to start with the children.
I'm listening.
I rolled my thumbs and chose my words carefully. An experimental school where children of the Northlands and Motherlands could learn together and form friendships built on mutual respect and curiosity.
You think one class of kids would change things?
He asked skeptically. To cross water, you have to build a bridge, I said calmly.
No, you don't.
Khan chuckled and pulled back a strand of his dark hair from his face.
You just have to find a boat or be a good swimmer.
My point is that the children would be great ambassadors and bridge builders.
I bloody hope so.
Khan scowled at me.
Christina says the very mentioning of N-men is illegal, and that we're treated like a myth to scare children.
He folded his arms.
A good place to start would be to educate your people that we're actually good and honest men and not creepy monsters.
I sighed, unable to share my honest thoughts with him.
Spit it out,
Khan ordered, and waved a hand.
I'm a man, Pearl. I don't get easily shocked. And you might as well learn that in the Northlands we value honesty more than politeness.
I wouldn't feel comfortable offending you, I argued.
Good. Then tell me what you're holding back.
I hesitated.
For fuck's sake, woman, get into your head that it's offensive to me that you think me too fragile to handle a sharp tongue or opinions different from mine.
Very well. I cleared my throat and let my thoughts spill out. You say that you don't want us to see you as monsters, but the problem is that to us your behavior, your culture, and your values are those of monsters. Khan narrowed both eyes and leaned forward, speaking each word slow and hard.
What the fuck are you talking about?
You kill for fun, I said, and looked up at the deer head hanging on the wall not far from me.
Oh, come on. That's like saying that all our ancestors were monsters. Hunting animals doesn't make us monsters, and you damn well know it.
You treat women like objects to own and control, I stated calmly.
We protect our women,
he objected.
We honor them.
Do you? I challenged him. If one of the women born here were to choose to remain unmarried and pursue a career, could she? His jaw tightened.
No.
I didn't think so, I said and leaned back. So let me ask you this. How would you like it if I told you what woman to marry, and that your only purpose in life was to have sex with her and get her pregnant? Khan frowned. Forget about power, or being respected for what's between your ears. All that's asked of you is that you reproduce. He snorted at me.
Our women are given choices. It's not like we dictate to them who to marry. They have 5 candidates to choose from.
Khan told me in a pedantic tone. Then I'll return the favor in our little thought experiment. You can choose 1 out of 5 women to control you and dominate you. And here's a bonus. If you don't feel like having sex with her, she will still demand it.
Khan. And is 1 of the 5 women you? I asked, unwilling to let her get to me with her stupid thought experiment. Pearl blinked. What? In this thought experiment, can I have you as my wife and make you pregnant all the time? I grinned. Because if I can, it doesn't sound too bad. You're not exactly my type, but if we turned off the light, I could probably work with that. I was messing with her and enjoying how her pretty mouth fell open. Pearl was beautiful, and she had to know it, but my sharp reply gave me the same type of rush that came with telling an opponent, checkmate. Pearl's chest heaved as if she only now remembered to breathe. "No, you can't pick me," she said firmly. "But what you can do is focus on the future of your people instead of playing mind games." "Hey," I threw up my hands, "you're the one talking about thought experiments, not me." "Does that mean you're against the idea of an inclusion experiment with children?" she asked. "No."
"No?"
"I mean, it depends," I pondered out loud. "Where would it be? Who would teach? How would we agree on the curriculum? And what would be the next step when they're done with school?"
"Well, ultimately, the children should help bridge the cultural differences between the Motherlands and the Northlands," she emphasized. "It's just an idea, but if we start small, then down the line, bigger things might happen."
"Like men on the council," I repeated, well aware that Pearl had practically ignored me the first time I brought it up. This time she looked straight at me.
"I'm talking about small steps. Men on the council would be considered a fall into the abyss."
"Hmm," I grunted. "We'll see about that." Pearl arched a brow, but didn't say anything. "All right, I'll think about it, but it would have to be here, in the Northlands. There's no way I'm letting any of my boys live in the Motherlands, unless you're prepared to let me freely travel there to make sure that my boys are still raised as real men."
She moved in her seat. "I asked you to stop saying real men."
I loved that I was getting under her skin. For her to bring this subject up was like honey to a bear. She wanted our nations to unite. The thought alone made me smile smugly, because I wanted that too. With me as the ruler, of course, but those details weren't important for now. If she was willing to give us a whole class of girls to form and influence, I would take it. Let them grow up with our boys and fall in love. Ah, the thought of teen pregnancies and children being created naturally made my blood flow faster. "I think your idea of that school is growing on me. What age group were you thinking?" I asked.
"Oh, from the youngest children possible. I think that's necessary if we want the best outcome."
"No," I argued. "You know damn well that no mothers will allow their toddlers to come live here. They have to be older, like teens."
"Teens," she said, and wrinkled her nose. "Teens are the worst. They don't listen to adults to begin with, and they're already full of prejudices."
"Preteens, then," I compromised, thinking I could be patient. Pearl gave a solemn nod.
"I'll have to contact the council to get their feedback. If they say no, there's no need to entertain the idea further."
Squaring my shoulders, I stated, "And that is why I love being the sole ruler. No one to argue with, no one to ask for permission. It's much easier that way." Pearl gave me a look that told me she was keeping her thoughts to herself again, that it pissed me off. "You know, about this prejudice thing," I said, "Christina has revealed some of the rumors about us, and it's hard to believe that Momsies are so naive as to think we're all cannibals and rapists."
"Don't call us naive," Pearl objected. "And I don't see why it's strange that we would fear the worst, what with the history between our nations."
"Cannibals?" I spit out. "Really?" She smiled.
"Yes, well, I for one am pleased that you're not cannibals, but as for the rapist part, I can't help wonder why a woman needs protection here, if not because you don't trust your men."
I stiffened and tapped my thumb on my thigh. "Why do I get the feeling we're still playing chess and you just took my queen?"
"Because it's a legitimate question."
Pearl lowered her voice and threw a nod to the door.
"Are the guards there to hold me in or keep us safe from people on the outside?"
"Both," I said.
"You admit that there's a danger?"
I gave a curt nod, and her expression grew worried.
"That only proves that I'm not naive. We both know that some of your men would have no quarrel with raping me if I wasn't protected."
Fuck her. She was right, but none of those fuckers would ever get to her. I didn't want to explain to her that my biggest concern was my own brother. He was a ticking time bomb whom I didn't trust to be around her, and I didn't want to explain to her that the only person who could truly keep her safe from Magni was me. Spreading my legs, I sunk lower in the chair. Are you sure you want to know? I asked.
Yes, she nodded.
Slowly, I massaged the bridge of my nose and spoke quietly. The truth is that your timing is really bad. You see, every 5 years there's a heathen ritual where a virgin is sacrificed under a full moon, and it's been almost 5 years since the last victim was found. I narrowed my eyes. The guards are here to protect you because I worry that the bastards will try to get to you. I'll spare you the gory details, but let's just say she wasn't a virgin after that night, and she didn't survive the brutal treatment the men subjected her to. I expected Pearl to laugh at the absurdity, but she pressed her legs together and swallowed hard as her left hand grasped the armrest of the sofa and squeezed until her knuckles went white. The ritual is illegal, of course, I said. Women are precious to us, and it's a great loss when we lose a female. I suppose that's why the heathens see a female virgin as the highest sacrifice they can offer their gods. I sighed. I wish I could find a way to break their necks so they would stop the barbaric tradition. It's a damn shame for any woman to end up drained of her blood and violated like that. Pearl's nostrils flared as she hyperventilated. Is this true? She asked in a shaken voice. Do you think I would lie about something this serious? I shot back, while finding amusement in my point that Momsies were naive. Are you calling me a liar?
No, I would never, she apologized.
Accusing someone of lying was probably what Christina always referred to as improper communication. What a bunch of pussies. Pearl's eyes shot to the door and then back to the window, and she looked like she was expecting a horde of zombies to come through any second now, or rather, heathen endmen. Jeez. Sure you don't want to sleep in my bed after all? I asked. She was so freaked out that she couldn't speak. Her mind had probably shown her plenty of worst-case scenarios since she agreed to come, but I didn't think human sacrifice had been one of them. In a way, it was brilliant, since it was a known fact that many cultures had practiced human sacrifice. Christ. I wanted to roll my eyes, offended that she thought so little of us. Talk about being brainwashed. Are you a virgin? I asked her, because I was genuinely curious. She didn't answer me, but sat with her head down and her shoulders tensed up. You are, aren't you? It's okay, we can remedy that. Tonight, if you want, I offered, and laid it on so thick that surely she would get that it was a joke. But she didn't. Moving to the edge of my seat, I leaned in and took her hand. Look at me, Pearl. With a finger under her chin, I lifted her face and saw pools of water filling her eyes. There was a bit of guilt, seeing the sheer terror in her eyes. Hey, don't cry. If I fuck you tonight, you won't be a candidate for virgin sacrifice, will you? She jerked her hand back, and tears ran down her cheeks. Hey, I'm just trying to problem solve here, I said. So, what do you say?
I say no,
she said firmly, drawing her tears away, her chest rising and falling with her shallow gulps of air. She was taking it much too seriously, and I felt a little bad for her. I'm just messing with you, sweetheart. I laughed, to underline it as a joke, and slowly her shoulders fell back into place.
You were lying?
She whispered, blinking away her tears. Of course I was lying, I grinned. Christ, you mumsies really are naive.
Chapter 6 Forbidden Books Pearl. After Khan's cruel lie that he was protecting me from heathens wanting to sacrifice me to their gods, I learned to be critical of his words. He was shameless and openly admitted to lying when it served him. I should have expected it, of course, but in my 30 years, I had never met a liar like him. It wasn't that no one ever lied in the Motherlands. I'm sure they did. I, too, had said things that weren't completely true. I had told my friend that I loved her apple pie to spare her feelings, and I'd told Magni I didn't know where Laura was to protect her. By no means was I a saint, but at least I had never lied for my amusement, or to hurt someone else. He was confrontational, but I stood my ground when every night he insisted I sleep in his bed. Watching him closely, I grew bolder and more direct in my communication with him. It was like learning to speak the language of the natives, using soft tones and sugarcoating my opinions like we did back home only infuriated him. Khan spoke his mind freely, and he asked the same of me. Days passed with us in a deadlock. Khan kept talking about Laura's return, but she never came, and it clearly frustrated him. Maybe he thought he would spend a few days as my protector, and send me back to the council telling about his royal treatment of me. Maybe he thought it would be interesting to learn more about our ways. Or maybe he actually thought he could influence me to see things from his perspective. He certainly tried.
They really said yes?
He asked when one night I excitedly told him I'd received news from the council. It's not that simple. They've agreed that the idea has merit, and they want me to prepare a more detailed plan of how a school with children from both sides of the border would look.
Good.
Khan nodded.
I've been giving it some thought, and I have some great ideas. I've also selected the mentor to run the school.
Run the school?
Yes, his name is Archer. And the boys from his learning facility are tougher and stronger than from many other schools.
Khan yawned loudly and arranged his pillows. Why should it be one of your men running the school? Why not one of our teachers? He snorted, signaling that I was being ridiculous. I would suggest we find two tolerant and open-minded teachers to work together. If you want to nominate this Archer, I'll meet with him and ask him questions to make sure he's the right man for the job, I said. Obviously, you can do the same with the candidates that will be suggested from our side.
Fair enough. But how do you plan on getting a teacher and the children to come here in the first place?
I don't know yet, I answered honestly. My first thought was that it should be a male teacher for safety reasons, but I think that defies the purpose. It needs to be a woman.
Hey, bring all the women you want to,
Khan chuckled.
But it's better if we keep this project under the radar for now. Maybe even find a secluded area for them to conduct the experiment. 10 or 15 girls in an all-boys school will be distracting. I want to give the children a completely different school where there's no outside influence.
All right, I nodded. I agree.
And I want Archer to be the primary mentor.
Pushing my jaw out, I said, Do you mean to sabotage this project before it's even begun?
No.
How can two teachers work side by side if one is above the other? He shrugged. They can't, I concluded, which is why they will share the responsibility. Khan chewed on his upper lip with a thoughtful expression before he spoke.
I'll talk to Archer about it.
What if you didn't? I asked slowly. We need to be strategic here.
I'm always strategic,
he claimed. Then how do you think he'll react if he's told to move from his current school to a secluded place to work with one class only, and on top of that, compromise with a female teacher on how to raise and train a combination of girls and boys? Khan huffed out air.
Yeah, that could be a hard one to sell, unless she's young and willing to become his wife.
Not a chance, I sputtered. This isn't an arranged marriage. We'll select a teacher who is a professional and has years of experience. I moved in my seat and pointed at him. You'd better guarantee me that he'll be a gentleman. That made Khan laugh. You know what I mean, I said, realizing that expecting an N-man to be a gentleman might be a bit naive. I think the best thing would be to find the candidates we can both agree on and let them fall in love with the project before we reveal the challenging part about their sharing the responsibility. Khan narrowed his eyes.
Sounds scheming to me. Isn't that against your fine ethical code?
No, we're not lying, I defended myself. We are just strategically choosing when to disclose the full scope of the project. They'll be recruited to run a school with a mix of boys and girls. If they agree to meet each other, surely we can convince them to work together on the project. Khan shrugged.
I'm not concerned about that. Archer will do what I tell him to.
Well, in that case, all we have to do is convince a female skilled teacher from the Motherlands to come live in the Northlands for at least 3 years as part of an experiment. I sighed, knowing that I was hoping for a miracle. Now that we agree on that, let's discuss the curriculum. Pearl. I was envious of Christina, who got to leave the manor every day to work on the excavation that had brought her here in the first place. A few times over the first 3 weeks, Khan allowed me to help her, but mostly I was forced to sit for hours in my golden cage. I read a lot, meditated, and worked on my plans for the inclusion project that Khan and I discussed on a daily basis. We didn't agree on the curriculum. And how could we, when he insisted that all envoys needed to learn how to hunt? In frustration with my wall of refusal, Khan informed me that he wouldn't waste his time fighting over it. Instead, the two teachers would have to create the new curriculum together. After all, they were the ones who had to implement it. We would let them battle it out, and then we could make adjustments if needed. Restless and bored, I would sometimes sneak off when Khan was lost in his own thoughts, and a few times I managed to return without his noticing that I'd been gone for 5 or 10 minutes. Still, my rush of freedom wasn't enough to entertain me for long, and I shamefully took up the guilty pleasure of books and movies that were forbidden in the Motherlands because of the violent and passionate content. Khan was only too happy when I disappeared into my own bubble, and it became almost addictive to see movies from before the Great War, when men and women lived in a completely different time. The violent scenes made me squeeze my eyes shut. The erotic scenes, too, but lately I'd been sneaking a few peeks, and understood why these movies were forbidden in the Motherlands. They made you feel things you shouldn't, and the more I saw, the more questions I had. Christina, have you ever heard about something called the Walk of Shame? I asked late one night when we stood by ourselves in the corner of the living room. She was arranging the brown curls that always escaped her braid. The Walk of Shame? Yes, I came across that expression in a book, and I'm not sure what it means. Christina furrowed her brow. I could find out. How? Boulder made sure I had access to their internet. You know they built on top of the old one from before the war. That means that some things are still there. But you can't trust the old internet. Most of the content was deleted or falsified during the war, I argued. I know, but for archaeological research it's great. And I'll bet we can find a definition for the Walk of Shame. Huh, I smiled. It's worth a try, but I can't believe they would still use it. Christina flushed red and looked down. What's wrong? I asked. Looking over her shoulder, she pulled me closer. They mostly use it to see forbidden movies from the past. Okay, I nodded. I could hardly judge them, as I did too. No, she said. You don't understand. I'm talking about pornography.
Pornography?
Yes, have you heard about porn?
I nodded. Yes, it's a concept from before the Big Enlightenment.
Christina was an innocent, and I didn't want her to know that we council members were aware of certain groups of deviants within our society who were drawn to sexual activities that she would find disturbing. Yes, it's people having sex on film, and according to Boulder, men here still enjoy it. Christina confided in me. Suspicion hit me. Have you seen this with your own eyes? Her eyes flickered around the room. Once in the forbidden section of the university library. Strictly research-related, of course. Of course, I said with my brows arched. Come on. Christina took my hand and pulled me quietly along, out of the dining room and up the stairs to her and Boulder's suite. Feeling like a rebel for escaping my prison guard, or protector, as Khan liked to call himself, I sprinted up the stairs with her. The men had their backs to us and were discussing something business-related.
Hurry,
Christina whispered, and took the last 10 steps 2 at a time, ushering me inside her room.
You think they noticed?
She asked out of breath, and leaned her back against the inside of her door as if prepared to have it knocked down any second.
They will soon, I said with a grin, adrenaline pumping through my veins.
Then we'd better hurry, she concluded and pushed away from the door, activating her wristband.
Access internet, she instructed. Look up definition of walk of shame. A female voice answered. Walk of shame. An instance of walking back home on the day after an unplanned casual sexual encounter, typically dressed in the same clothes as the previous evening. I scrunched my face. You think fashion meant that much to them? Apparently so, Christina mused. Imagine shaming someone for wearing the same clothes 2 days in a row. Christina shook her head. I've done that plenty of times. Me too. People truly were extreme back then, I pointed out. But there was also a different expression I wondered about. I said, try looking up Jack in the Beanstalk. Okay? Christina had only managed to say the command before the door was flung open and Khan and Boulder rushed in.
What the fuck do you think you're doing?
Khan was in my face.
Are you stupid?
No, I said, my heart racing. Mother of all good. It was so close I could see every eyelash surrounding the normally golden brown eyes that were now darkened by fury.
What were you two up to?
Boulder asked Christina in a disapproving tone. Nothing, she said innocently, trying to silence the virtual assistant who was defining the expression I had asked about. Boulder and Khan exchanged a glance when the last words were spoken.
Repeat,
Boulder ordered, and the virtual assistant started up again. Jackin the Beanstalk, one of many euphemisms for masturbation, e.g., slapping the salami, jacking off, beating off, buffing the bishop, gleaning the obscene bean, choking the chicken, spanking the monkey, waxing the wanker, greasing the guppy. She kept going while both men turned to stare at us with disbelief.
Exactly what are you researching?
Boulder asked Christina, who ratted me out by exclaiming, Pearl was curious about some expressions that she didn't understand. Khan's lips pursed up in a devious smile.
Were you?
No. I mean, yes. But if I'd known the meaning, I wouldn't have.
You're curious about how men masturbate?
It's just a misunderstanding, I said quickly. But Khan was already leaving the room, and it was implicit that I should follow. Walking out the door, I threw a last glance over my shoulder and saw Boulder's eyes soften as he walked over to Christina. She would be all right. But looking at the way Khan stormed down the stairs, I also knew that I was in a big load of trouble. Khan! I called after him. But he headed straight for his suite with me on his heels and slammed the door as soon as we were inside. Khan, I tried again. And this time he turned around, and with a pissed-off expression, he backed me up against the wall.
You think this is a joke?
He muttered threateningly. No.
You're a hostage, Pearl.
I swallowed hard.
Say it,
he demanded. I'm a hostage, I said quickly. I think that's been established.
Then why the fuck do you think you're the lady of the house and can waltz around as you please?
I don't think that, I protested. We were only gone for a few minutes. With a finger pointing in my face, Khan growled softly.
You will never pull shit on me like that again, or I'll punish you for it.
The way he towered over me with his giant frame and raw masculinity was intimidating, and my legs shivered slightly. Enough with all your shouting and threats. I held up a hand as a shield. I heard you the first time.
Hearing and understanding isn't the same.
He growled and pressed against me, physically making a point that he was bigger, stronger, and far more menacing than me.
If you break your word, I can break mine too.
His eyes were blazing into mine, and his lips grazed over my lips in a sensual way that made me push at him. He didn't budge, but kept me encased with his body and masculine scent. I swallowed hard, for once not able to find words.
It's not a threat, Pearl. It's a promise. You do it again, and I will punish you any way I please.
His words held a sexual promise that made my back tingle. I needed distance, and pushed at him again, and this time he stepped back enough for me to squeeze past him. I ran for the bathroom, my body shaking with the need to release the emotional overload I was under.
5 minutes,
Khan sneered.
You're not sulking in the bathroom all night. 5 minutes and then you're coming back out here.
slamming the door behind me and looking into the mirror. I didn't recognize the stormy eyes or the lowered eyebrows of the woman in the reflection. I looked somber and angry, like someone out of mental balance. Yeah, that's what happens when you're forced to live with N-men, I told myself, and heaved in a deep breath. Remember who you are. My mother's voice came from within, and closing my eyes, I summoned the bravest part of myself. I'm strong, confident, clever, warm, and I'm doing this to protect Laura and my people. There's nothing that awful man can say to bring me down. I don't need his approval to feel good about myself. Let him shout and threaten me. I'm a grown woman, not a helpless child. Empowered by my pep talk, I turned back to look at my reflection. I couldn't let him get to me like that. I had to remember that Khan was only playing mind games. And he's a master at it. For a moment, I'd thought he was going to kiss me for real, but I still remembered his telling me that I wasn't his type. It was all about control and dominance for him, nothing else. My eyes ran up and down my body. I had always liked my height and long legs, but the rest of me was pretty standard compared to the women in the movies that I had been watching lately. I brushed my eyelashes. They were long and full, but because I was blonde, you had to be close to see it. I didn't consider myself a vain person, and my focus had always been on others. But reading all these old books of passion between men and women, I couldn't help but wonder how others saw me. No one had ever called me beautiful like in the books. In fact, the only man who had ever commented on my looks was Khan, when he said he would prefer to turn the lights out if he was to have sex with me. At the time, it hadn't offended me, because I was completely indifferent to his sexual desires, so why did I feel a pinch in my chest thinking about it now? And why did the way Boulder looked at Christina make me feel like I was missing out on something? I couldn't imagine she was any more interested in having sex with an N-man than I was. But that hunger in Khan's eyes, when he had me pressed against the wall just a few moments ago, and the seconds of thinking he was going to kiss me, had woken something deeply buried inside me that I didn't know what to do with. The loud banging on the door made me jump a little.
"Open up and get out here,"
Khan ordered. And when I didn't respond, he banged again.
"Your men might have sticks for arms, but I'll fucking tear down this door if I have to."
Knowing him, he probably would. With a last deep breath to steady myself, I opened the door and was met by my temperamental prison guard.
"Finally,"
Khan said grumpily, turned around, and gave me the silent treatment for a few minutes before he began a rant.
"I thought I could trust you. Aren't you supposed to be exceptionally honest and have incredible integrity?"
I walked to the sofa, not answering.
"I know they test you before you make it to the council. My dad told me before he died. He tried bribing a council member once, but apparently that didn't work."
"It's true," I said. "Only the people selfless enough and with a high level of integrity can be part of the council." Khan was calmer now, but still grumpy, so I volunteered information to appease him. "Some children stand out and are recommended by their teachers. They have to excel in all five areas needed for a council member, and only a few are selected for further training. Once they have completed their training, they are eligible for the elections that take place every 3 years."
"Does that mean some of you people complete your training but are never elected to the council?"
"Yes, only 1 in every 10 graduates is elected to the council."
"And what are the 5 areas you must excel in?"
he asked. I counted on my fingers. Generosity, selflessness, the ability to resist temptation, stamina to stay focused for long hours and consume and understand large amounts of information with complicated details. I raised the 5th finger on my right hand. And lastly, empathy, because we have to be natural defenders of the weak and stay true to our word.
"Yeah, but how do you test that in a child?"
he asked again. "There are different ways."
"Okay, so give me an example. How did they test your empathy?"
He raised his eyebrow mockingly and spoke the last word with sarcasm. "Sometimes tests are constructed. Other times natural dilemmas occur in their lives where true character shines through. A child under evaluation won't know about it."
You didn't answer my question. How did they test you?
One of the situations in my case file was one that happened when I was 12. My family unit decided to have a large party with musicians, food, and dancing. But I'd already been invited to a birthday party by a girl from my class, and I'd accepted before knowing about the larger party. Everyone told me just to cancel the birthday party, but the girl was new in town, and I knew she didn't have many friends yet. I bit my lip, still remembering how torn I'd felt. I wanted to party with my family and friends, but I kept imagining the new girl feeling let down if I broke my promise to her. I couldn't do it. And in the end, I went to her birthday while everyone partied at my house.
That's stupid,
Khan said firmly. I gave him an annoyed glance. No, it's not. It's a sign of solidarity, empathy, and integrity, and those are all fine values.
Bullshit,
Khan said, and climbed onto his bed, pulling back his covers with hard movements.
What you're describing is inflexibility. People who are inflexible are the worst. Once they make up their mind, they're locked in and refuse to change their minds even when it's fucking obvious they're wrong about something.
That's not the same thing at all, I exclaimed.
If it was me, I would have found a solution. Maybe she could have moved her party and come with you to the bigger party instead.
I gave him a pointed stare. I'm not like you. I don't order people around and make them change their birthday parties so I can join other, more interesting things. And it just emphasizes why it's a good thing councilwomen aren't motivated by power.
Why is that a good thing? Power is wonderful.
Let me see if I can explain this to you. I held up my hands and formed a pyramid by placing my thumbs and index fingers against each other. Here in the Northlands, you have a hierarchy, where the masses on the bottom work to make life easier for the few on top. Not least you, their ruler. I was thinking dictator, but knew he preferred ruler, so I went with that.
Uh-huh,
he confirmed.
Which is why power is the greatest.
In the Motherlands, we like to say that we have a flat hierarchy. But truth be told, it's probably more like a reversed pyramid where the few on the bottom serve to make life easier for the masses on top.
That makes no sense.
He wrinkled his nose in disgust.
And I'm not just talking about your fucking council, but your whole society.
What do you mean? I asked, and picked up a tooth cleaner from my bag. The small device was the size of a large rice grain, and worked its way around my mouth, cleaning and polishing each tooth.
Why should the lazy person have as much as the one who works hard?
Khan noted.
There needs to be an incentive for people to want to work. A capitalistic society makes much more sense.
To you, I said, and got under the cover on the sofa. But how can you be happy in your big manor if children are starving in the streets?
No child is starving in the Northlands,
Khan argued, stretching his long legs and arranging his pillows to be more comfortable.
They grow up in schools that feed them plenty. We want big, strong men, not small weaklings like...
He stopped himself before repeating the usual insult to the men in the Motherlands. The room was large, and it wasn't ideal to speak across it, but Khan and I had a tendency to get into long arguments, and since both of us wanted the last words, we had continued our discussions into the wee hours before. I'm happy to hear that no child is starving, but what happens when those children grow up? I asked and propped myself on my elbow.
They get a job,
he replied matter-of-factly. And do all jobs pay the same?
No, of course not. It's supply and demand.
I see. So some people are paid very little and live a life in poverty, while others have more than they need.
Exactly. That's the way it's always been, and I see no reason to change it.
Khan leisurely placed his hands behind his neck, and his cover slid down to reveal that his torso was bare. I had seen him walk around in only pants, and the sight of his ripped muscles and large tattoo always made me divert my eyes, a bit flustered. You're just fascinated because he's different, I told myself. Khan was much too masculine to be considered attractive. I couldn't see him and not be reminded that it was male pride and ego that had caused the world to collapse. 400 years wasn't enough to make anyone forget the pain of losing whole continents,
because of power-hungry men with access to nuclear weapons and war machinery. Any woman from the Motherlands would prefer a gentle, considerate, and kind man. Khan was anything but. Maybe Khan would be attractive if he dressed and behaved more like a civilized man from the Motherlands. I played with the thought, but it was hard to imagine Khan any less masculine. The man was as opulent as this grand suite with all the expensive furniture, rugs, artwork, and antique books. He always wore clothing that looked expensive and fit him perfectly. But the appeal of that was completely negated by the fact that much of his clothing was made of leather.
"Pearl,"
he said, bringing me back to the conversation.
"Did you hear me? I said it's been this way always, and I'm not going to change it."
"Because power corrupts," I pointed out. "Hierarchies have a tendency to look best from the top. But I'm certain that you would see it differently if you were the poor guy instead of the richest man in the country."
"I'm not the richest man in the country,"
he said with a smug smile.
"But I am the most powerful."
"Then imagine what you could do with all that power. How many people you could help."
"Ah, but sweet Pearl,"
he said, knowing full well I didn't care for his patronizing endearments.
"I'm not a saint. I'm a pragmatic ruler who wants my country to prosper. Ever since you came, you've challenged the way we do things. But let me tell you right now, your ways are illogical."
"No, they're not. The fairness principle makes complete sense, and everyone is happy in the Motherlands." Khan clicked his tongue.
"I refuse to believe that everyone is happy. Admit it. You've made everything free for everyone, and that means someone is getting screwed over while others are getting an easy ride."
"No, it doesn't," I insisted. "That's how the democratic fairness system works. We all contribute what we can, and together we create a beautiful society. I don't mind paying for parks, even if I never go there. I'm happy resources are spent on hospitals, although I've never been sick." I smiled proudly. "I know I've helped pay for bridges I've never crossed, schools I've never attended, and fertility treatment I've never received myself. That's what an evolved society does." Khan tilted his head.
"And you find that fair?"
"Yes, because everything I need is accessible to me as well. That way everyone has equal opportunities to express their unique talents and do what they're passionate about." I frowned when Khan lifted his duvet and waved it up and down. "What are you doing?" I asked.
"I farted,"
he said with a small grin. I just gaped at him. His lack of manners still managed to surprise me. His grin widened.
"Oh, I'm sorry. I thought since you were letting out shit, I could too."
"I was talking about the fairness principle. It's a beautiful thing," I lectured him.
"It's shit."
With an annoyed huff, I lay down and turned my back to him, signaling that our conversation was over.
"You know," he said, still grinning, "when you get tired of sleeping on that sofa, you can join me in my soft bed."
"I'm not sleeping in your stinking bed," I muttered through gritted teeth.
"Yet,"
he said softly. But I heard him and lifted my head to look back at him. "Try never, and turn off your light." He did, but there was still a glow of light from the bathroom, which was something I'd insisted on after fumbling hopelessly around his huge suite and bumping my foot on his bed the first night. My nightly ritual of thinking happy and grateful thoughts was interrupted after 3 or 4 minutes, when I heard Khan get out of bed and come closer. My ears were pricking up every sound of his naked feet across the floor, and for each of his 18 steps, my heart beat faster.
"Pearl."
His voice was low, soft, and too close. "Yes?" I said without turning around to face him.
"I want to ask you something."
Always too curious for my own good, I slowly turned to see him sitting in a squatting position next to me.
"Aren't you curious?"
he asked, and leaned so close that a whiff of his pleasant cologne played with my senses and brought back memories of his almost kissing me earlier. "About what?"
"About fucking."
"No!" I cried out and sat up, pointing to his bed. "Get back to your bed and leave me alone!"
He tilted his head but didn't show any sign of leaving.
What if I offered to teach you how to fly my hybrid?
What? No! I exclaimed, not seeing the connection at all.
I'm curious, he said calmly. And I would like to try it with a real woman.
Then do that, but leave me out of your perverted thoughts. With a raised brow, he asked,
Why do you think I have perverted thoughts?
Because, I stammered, holding back what I really wanted to say.
Because what?
Because you're a man of the North, I finally sputtered.
Hmm.
He got up from his squatting position.
So you think that all momsies have pure thoughts, while we men up here in the Northlands are perverted by nature?
My silence was a confirmation. I froze when he leaned down over me and whispered in a low, deep voice.
Maybe you're right, but I doubt it. Let's make a test. You lie here and think pure thoughts while I go to my bed, and imagine you naked underneath me, spreading your legs for me and letting me ride you until we both scream out our orgasms.
I was too dumbfounded to answer, but sure enough he went back to his bed and made no secret of masturbating. Knowing that he was fantasizing about me only made it worse, and somehow my imagination betrayed me by planting images of Khan on top of me in my head. I swallowed hard and tried blocking the unwelcome arousal that built in my body the longer his ragged breath lasted. It made no sense, since I didn't even like Khan. He was cocky and self-assured to a fault. He had bad manners and was violent, with a brutal side that I'd seen in glimpses when he got into arguments with his men. He was too large, masculine, and hairy to be attractive. Stop, I ordered myself. This isn't me. I always look for the beauty in everyone. Surely even Khan has redeeming qualities. But giving myself permission to think positive thoughts unleashed a whole bunch of them. He's fiercely intelligent and good at directing a discussion to his advantage, which challenges me. And his golden eyes are beautiful when he's not mad. Also, he has kept his word and kept me safe. My focus on the positive didn't last long, as his moaning from the bed rose in volume. Ugh, but the mind games he plays, I thought, frustrated, and tried hard to block out the thought of his pumping in and out of me in a slow, steady rhythm.
Fuck yeah, Pearl. Take all of me.
He groaned in a low, raspy voice. The images of his naked body merging with mine caused heat to spread at my core, and I squirmed on the sofa, unable to find any rest with a strong tingling sensation down below. I'm not aroused, and I won't touch myself, I told myself. But both were untrue statements, and it was a great relief when Khan finally reached his climax and stopped.
Thank you, he grinned, out of breath. I had no idea you were so flexible. I had your legs on my shoulders when I took you.
Pervert, I muttered.
All innocent thoughts in your head? Or did you feel like joining me?
He clapped his bed invitingly.
If you give me a second, I'm happy to go for another round.
Good night, I said sharply and closed my eyes. He chuckled.
Good night, Pearl. And sweet dreams. If you need to do more research on masturbation, I'm happy to let you jack my beanstalk.
Chapter 7 Archer Khan. The meeting took place in the far corner of my private park, an ungroomed area with wildflowers and cotton trees that Pearl had developed a particular fondness for after we walked here once. To me, the meeting was unnecessary, since I'd already decided I wanted Archer to run the inclusion project. Pearl, however, insisted that she wanted to interview him and at least two other candidates for the job. Leaning against a tree, I greeted Hanzo, a middle-aged man named after a famous ninja. It was laughable, because with his large beer belly and wheezy breathing, Hanzo definitely couldn't sneak up on anyone. Thank you for coming, Pearl said, and folded her hands behind her back. Ah, so apparently she was learning not to grab strangers' hands and share intimate look-me-in-the-eye moments. Good. I didn't want his greasy hands anywhere close to her. This shouldn't take long,
she said softly. Lord Khan tells me that you're a teacher. Hanzo gave me a sideways glance. A mentor, he corrected her. Or master, if you prefer. Mentor, yes, of course.